Hello, my fans, friends. Welcome to the Rich Herring podcast feed, powered by Acast Plus. Thanks to everyone who's come to see the Can I Have My Ball Back tour so far. It's been going really well. I've got a 4-star review in The Standard, 4-star review in The Telegraph, who once called me the worst comedy experience of the year, so that's a turnaround. People have been coming, people have really been enjoying it, and it's getting better and better. The only gigs this week are both in Pocklington, the town I was born in, near York. There's a couple of tickets left for the evening show and a few more tickets left for the matinee, I think about 4:30. But love to see you there, Yorkshire. Pop along. Check richardherring.com/ballback/tour or richardherring.com/gigs to see if I'm coming near to you. There are tickets left for nearly every show in the tour. I think Norwich has sold out. And a couple of gigs in London could do with your support as well. Anyway, please listen to the podcast. Do spread the news about the podcast to your friends. Listen as much as you can. Numbers are slightly down, which may affect the future of this podcast. So just leave it playing, even if you're not in the room. Love you. Now sit back, relax, and enjoy whatever it is you're going to listen to.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally, for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hello, Norwich. And now from Norwich, it's the podcast of the week. Will you please welcome Richard Herring? Thank you very much. Hello. Oh, you're much better than last week's audience already. Was anyone in last week? Yeah, it's a bit unfair just to make you pay twice to come. But there we go. Thanks for coming again. Welcome to Richard Herring's Lashing Storms and Tempests podcast. Hasn't been that bad, has it? Hasn't been that bad here in Norwich. For people at home, there was some mild weather during the recording. This was worried whether I'd get home again. I don't want to spend 2 nights in Norwich. One's enough. I was hanging out on Herring Bridge in Great Yarmouth. I've not been asked to go and open that. I'm quite offended. It's named after me. And some herring fishermen said they call it Rullister, but I don't know if that's going to... It's Great Yarmouth. I'd call it just about passable Yarmouth. I've been there quite recently. We were looking for a restaurant, and Domino's was the best. That was the best. We ate it in the car. And escaped. What a lovely, lovely... Thank you, Great Yarmouth, for naming the bridge after me, even though you claim you didn't. You know you did. I'll do this because this is important. For next week's show. I always like to check the news, the Norwich Evening News. What a fine paper. Fine that is. And the big news is Halloween, as we've just gone Halloween, and the main headline is Child's Pumpkin Smashed by Yobs on Eve of Halloween. That was in Costasey. Is that how you say Costasey? Whoa, fuck no. How do you say it?
Cossey.
Cossey, okay. What, there's a fucking T and E, Dad? And it's the mum's very upset. Some little kids have made some pumpkins, and some 11-year-olds have come and stamped on them. I mean, it's Halloween, right? Fucking hell, it's trick or treat. You did it. You're the mum. Are you the mum? I've just come to try and get over the trauma. Come all the way from Costi. Anyway, good. And I've looked up some Norwich facts. Norwich Cathedral has the second tallest spire and second largest cloisters in England of any cathedral. Close, isn't it? Bad luck. Knock it down, try again, guys. See, I nearly got there. Nearly got there. I'll save that one for next week. Okay, that's good. Save that news story for next week. Is that really hard? I've been working all day in Costa and in Cafe Nero and Pret a Manger. That's all I've got for you. It's too much doing four podcasts in four weeks. In four different weeks. Look, we've got a fantastic guest, so I'm going to crack straight on. You're going to really enjoy this double bill. I can tell you that right now if you hang around till next week. He's probably best known for playing Mr. Farley in Time, Gentlemen, Please. Time, Gentlemen, Please, a show that I wrote and I don't remember him being in. Will you please welcome Jeff Innocent, ladies and gentlemen. It's Jeff Innocent. Here he comes. Mr. Farley. There's a mic there. Grab a mic. There we go.
Thank you very much. Hello, Norwich.
Jeff Innocent. Do you remember playing Mr. Farley in Time, Gentlemen, Please, Jeff?
I don't remember that.
No, I don't remember either. Do you think you did? Definitely.
Are you sure that's me?
Well, it's your dad. It's on your IMDb page. I vaguely remember. I think Jeffrey Whitehead is this.
Yeah. I remember that episode. That's a very early credit there, though.
Yeah, it is, yeah.
I've got some more.
You have got some amazing things. You played... I mean, I feel this is a bit offensive. You played Bald Friend in Mean Machine. How did you get that part?
I keep revisiting that one as well, Bald Friend. My favourite one, have you got Cakey Crumb, the Cockney stallholder in Time...
Call
the Midwife. That was a great one, that was.
Yeah, I was surprised to see Call the Midwife on your CD. Yeah, I have to say, to me, I think you're probably the only person who's in Mean Machine and Call the Midwife.
that was one of those ones where what happens when you're not an actor and you're a stand-up comedian, you go and do bits of acting, that's when you start bumping into very famous people. But you can't start going, oh, look at you, it's you. You have to carry on as if you're all equals, but it's very hard. And Jenny Agutter was in episode.
Yeah, bloody hell.
And, well, exactly. when they call for lunch, all the extras go off somewhere else and all the talent, as they called it, go into a small room. So I was sitting here with Jenny Agutter and having lunch, and she was making phone calls, ordering some dress. She was going to compare the Last Night of the Proms. It's very posh.
Yeah.
And I was texting all my friends and going, I've got Jenny Agutter. And they're going, get her to do the shower scene in America. it's amazing. You can't go, you're fucking Jenny Agutter, but you have to make out you're all on the same level, didn't you?
Yeah. I saw Jenny Agutter in the BBC canteen in about 1990, and I genuinely went weak at the knees. And then I did a joke about saying it's probably just a muscle memory of all the time I walked the shower scene in American World of London. I have to apologise. It's actually raining in the venue at the moment. I don't know if you've spotted that.
Oh, yeah.
It's not hit us yet, but it's, you know, I mean, it's encouraging, isn't it?
Wouldn't get that in Twitch.
Quite a lot of theatres have closed because the roofs are about to collapse. So I wonder if anyone's checked this one and whether, if we go together, bury us together, me and Jeff. What did you say? Are you just talking amongst yourselves? Be brave, heckle and be brave and say it again if you missed it. Well, look, Jeff, I've known you for a while and I've been a fan of your stand-up. You've been going for quite a while, but you started stand-up quite late. You did a few... jobs beforehand. What I love about your stand-up is, and I think, and I was talking to Stuart Goldsmith, I think, in his episode about this, about you, is that, you know, you come on and you present something that people make an assumption about you, and then that assumption is quickly overturned, but you play around with that, and it's quite good
fun. Yeah, I do. It's a lot of fun, yeah. It's a lot of fun looking one way, but actually being another.
Yeah.
In fact, my whole act probably hangs on that idea. Actually,
yeah,
but I was 41 when I started.
Yeah, but you do, you know, you are an East End guy.
Oh, so yeah,
you
look like an authentic Cockney.
And your family had, you know, some associations.
Certainly,
with,
yeah.
With
yeah.
What
Although
people...
my mum, who's still alive, despite my best wishes, and She's like sort of Vera Lynn. She's one of those old born during the war, never going to die kind of people. And I did an interview where I talked about my family and how they earned a living, and she told me off for being a grass. And so I'm not really allowed to say anything. I can talk around it. So the last time I spoke about my family, I called them entrepreneurs. And I just hope that everyone would have worked that out, yeah. You know? But she really told me off.
Yeah, okay, well, that's
so
good.
So, yeah, I come from a family of entrepreneurs.
You have to have a code. You have to have a code. Yeah, yeah. But you didn't go into that business
I think I was a bit arty.
Yeah.
Well, certainly in my family I was a bit arty. And so I went to university and went in another direction.
Yeah.
Which was good, really. Yeah, yeah. I'm pleased. You know, I don't want people to take liberties with me, though. But I've had my scrapes,
yeah.
You know, but it's all worked out okay.
I mean, you studied history and philosophy.
I did, yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah. Again, people might not be expecting that at gigs. But you've got all the info to back it up, you know.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, it's true. Yeah, but that was still in at the University of East London, so I still stayed on my manor,
yeah,
so to speak.
And you had some other jobs. I mean, again, you worked in Carnaby
Street.
Oh, well,
that's against type as well. But yeah. I used to come to Norwich. When I first left school, I did an apprenticeship to be a window dresser in men's fashion. And that would have been about 72 about 71 until 85. And used to work at King's Road, Carnaby Street in the early 70s. And I also travelled the country, you know, Norwich and places like that, dressing windows. So I don't look like a window dresser.
You don't. But
then I haven't always looked like this as well. There was a period where I was skinny and
did you have hair?
Had long hair.
Yeah,
long hair. In fact, I looked a bit like Danny Kaye when I was young.
Yeah, I can see
that. No one knows who the fuck Danny Kaye is.
I can see a bit of Danny Kaye in you now.
Well, I've looked like different people. I looked like Danny Kaye. I looked like Rod Stewart for a while in the early 70s.
Yeah, I can see that too.
Then I went through a Kojak period. And then more recently, I was described as a Jewish-looking Bruce Willis.
It's good.
How specific
really
is that?
Good. It's really good. And look, you've been doing stand-up on the circuit for, like, a quarter of a century, a bit more than a quarter of a
century.
Certainly,
yeah. About 26 years, yeah. I would say.
But you started, like, you were 41 when you started.
Yeah.
I was saying to you backstage that I think, like, you started a bit later, but, like, when I was starting, you would have fitted bang in with that crowd.
I always saw myself as part of that tradition, Alexi,
yeah.
Joe Brand, that whole alternative comedy thing.
Yeah.
But I didn't start until, mid-90s. So all that was really finished by then.
Yeah.
And it had become more mainstream. There were Jonglers, that chain of comedy clubs. And it was a different thing. But I still went into it with that. Slightly would have been an old-fashioned alternative ethos.
Yes.
Which I struggled with at first. But I managed to find my way back to that, I think, more recently. Because comedy clubs are not like late-night nightclubs as they became when I started. So I've stuck with my guns and it's all worked out okay, I think.
Yeah, and what's fascinating as well, especially to anyone who's known you for a while, is now you've got this new generation of fans as a result of being on social media. And it's exploded, right? So tell us about that.
Yeah, that's a really remarkable thing. And I wonder, I mean, I don't know what percentage of this audience are familiar with me on Instagram, but what happened is a young comedian that I'm friends with, he said, let's put some clips out on Instagram and see what happens. And it just exploded and I became an overnight internet sensation after doing comedy for 26 years. I wasn't anonymous as such. I used to, you know, if I went into the West End, people would go, oh, you're Jeff Innocent. But now I would say, I mean, I don't even have to leave the house. how about it? I mean, you know, a bailiff knocked. No, seriously. You see, here's the thing. I've got the fame, but I haven't got the money. I mean, so I'm still having to deal with bailiffs, even though I'm a famous person.
Yeah.
And I think what it is, as I said to you before, I think in the past, people would become famous gradually. So I'd be on EastEnders for a year, become famous, would have earned a few bob, moved out to Essex or something. Whereas I've become famous overnight. There's no money involved yet. but there's a lot of fame. And a bailiff knocked on the door and for some unpaid council tax. And I opened the door, and actually I was just about to have a go at him, because who likes bailiffs, you know? And he was dressed like a cop. You know those bailiffs that dress up like coppers so that you think, oh, it's the police? And I was just going about to coat him off for doing that. Which I can't do any of that anymore now that I'm famous. I can't kick off in public. Can't do any of that. You know, if someone treads on my toenail, I've got to let it go in case the cameras are up. So I was just about to go, oh, look at you. You went, you're that comedian, aren't you? So I don't even have to leave the house. I still have, to pay the money. But it's very weird. But it takes some getting used to, actually, because it's suddenly being famous. Within a month, on Instagram, it went from about 4,000 followers to over 100,000. Wow. And that's an instant audience.
Yeah.
So everywhere I go, but people don't care, do they? You'd be on a packed tube train. Oh, my God, I can't believe it's you. I must have a selfie. And they push through crowds of people to get you to do a selfie. So it's taken some getting used to.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you're pretty recognisable as well. I mean,
yeah, there is that.
It's a very strong, you know, you've got a very strong image, which really works for a stand-up. And I was interviewing Adam Bloom. I think he might have even talked about you in his book as well, but he's written a book about how important, you know,
sure,
had the images.
Yeah,
I'm
lucky
archetype
with that,
about.
I guess. Yeah. I'm lucky with that. Yeah. And I've always been an older comic in a younger comics environment. But, yeah, I get recognised a lot, and people say, Bruce! Oye vey, Bruce, oye vey. So, well, my dad's Jewish, I can do that. See, you get worried, he got worried then, didn't he?
So I wanted to talk to you about the you're still teaching stand-up, is that?
Yeah, I do. I run these comedy courses, which I've had to stop now because I've got a bit too famous for that.
Right.
And I really enjoy doing that. I think what it is it took me a lot of years to work out how to do stand-up comedy properly. And I figured that if I ran a comedy course, I could save people a lot of years.
Yeah.
And it's worked out okay. I haven't had anyone famous from my courses yet, but you never know. But it's a lovely thing to do, a stand-up comedy course, even if you're not going to become a comedian. It's a great experience, and I really enjoy doing that.
So, yeah, because you were gifted for your 40th birthday. This is why you sort of moved.
That's exactly it.
Yeah,
so you're gifted. That was my birthday present, a stand-up comedy course with Tony Allen.
It's amazing.
Who you probably know, but he was the Tony Allen was one of the first people. He was like an architect of alternative stand-up comedy in the late 70s, or they called it comedy cabaret or alternative cabaret in those days. I don't know if you were exactly there yourself.
No, I wasn't there. No, but, that's in the history books for me. Okay, but, it was about 10 years before me.
So I did a comedy course and, I really enjoy doing that.
Yeah, that's great. That's good to pass. That. Good to pass.
But, I did the window dressing, first of all. And then I went to... What have you got down there?
Anyway? Well, you were a DJ popularising...
Well, I've always been a DJ. Yeah. Always, Jamaican music's always been my big...
Yeah.
Thing from when I was about 14. I was a skinhead in the late. Yeah. I don't know. Do you know what? I said that thinking you might go, oh, really? You're going, oh, really? It's the same, isn't it? But yeah, I forget. I have had different hairstyles since then.
Yes.
But I was a skinhead, and that whole. I mean, I was at that age, 14, 1969 or whenever it was, where reggae just really hit in Britain, and that whole. Skinhead subculture, Jamaican music. It was just a fantastic thing for me.
Yeah.
And I've just stuck with that, really, as well, and being a DJ. That's actually why I'm deaf. I do a joke, because I wear hearing aids. I do a joke that I'm deaf because my wife's Nigerian. Come on, white people, relax. I don't even have to see if it's white people. It's Norwich. Diversity. And when I eventually went to sort my ears out, the audiologist said, have you ever listened to any loud music for any length of time? And I thought, there it is straight away. So, diversity made me deaf. So you're right to avoid it, Laurie. They know what they do.
But again, that's what you play. And you play... at a time where people are, you know, are like a bit, it's interesting to see an audience reaction just to even mentioning anything to do with race, especially as, you, as looking do. It kind of creates this, it creates this disconnect. And then, you know, and the wonderful thing is, of course, that you play around with that. And and again, you come from, you know, it's a, it, people are making a judgment about you, which I think is what's wonderful about it, because, you know, right, they're thinking you're being prejudiced, where in fact they're being prejudiced. So it's, but you're, as you say, you're married to a black woman.
Yeah. I mean, I always have been. I mean, you know, just come from that sort of multicultural environment where. Well, actually, there aren't any white women where I live, so I haven't really got any choice. But well, actually, my ex-wife is Nigerian. My present wife is from Sierra Leone. So there you go. I'm working my way around the West African coast. Any Cameroonians in? But I think what happens is this might sound pretentious, but you... Anyone who, it's a bit like if you've got an Italian partner or a Greek partner, there's certain aspects of their culture that become aspects of yours. So the next time you go to the next partner, you're going to be looking for some of those similar things. Does that make sense?
It does make sense. And you know, I find it interesting watching clips of you that, like, sometimes you're dressed, you know, in a way that people might expect to be dressed, and sometimes you're dressed in a sort of West African top.
Yeah, well, I do wear those clothes, you know, at functions and weddings and stuff like that. Yeah. So I thought, let's just see how that works on stage.
Yeah. I think it's interesting because it does slightly change the act, I think, as
it
well.
It certainly does, Well, the thing is, if my act sort of depends on me being unexpected and not being how I look, if I walk on wearing an big African shirt, then it loses some of that, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. But, you know, but it still, I mean, it still works, but it is interesting because, like, I feel, you know, have you found that the audiences sometimes still don't get it and still don't hear it? Because of their presumption... You describe yourself as the most... What do you say? The most racist...
The most racist-looking comedian. Yeah. No, it's not my strap line.
There's more to it. There's more to it than
that. Can you imagine that being on the poster? Hey, come and see the most racist-looking comedian on the circuit. Hey, full up with UKIP people queuing up. EDL all in the queue. We can't wait to see him. Hey... People from Ipswich. Yeah, well, they'd have to get someone else to read the poster for them, obviously. Come on! I know where I am, mate. Don't worry about that.
But do people...
Sorry, I didn't mean to do any of
this. It's good. It's good.
You can't help it, can you?
You can't help it.
Do
people not hear the... Because obviously the most racist looking and you're not racist.
People just don't hear lots of stuff. I got attacked on stage by these three white women and like middle class young student women who were drunk as well.
Yeah.
And they just decided they thought I was racist and they actually physically attacked me on the stage. What can you do?
Not a lot.
I've done Krav Maga for about 20 years, so I had a couple of little... moves to fend them off.
Right.
But, it just shows you how... I forget just how racist or backward people are politically. Even last week, I mean, this is quite amazing, actually. A polar opposite to being accused of being racist, I had a guy come up to me and said afterwards, he was a bit drunk, and he came up towards me as I was standing outside, and he went, "You're a race traitor, you are. Can't even marry your own kind." Believe that these ideas are still going on. So I get interpreted in different ways, but very rarely. You know, I mean, you don't really want to keep being misinterpreted, otherwise you're not doing your job properly, are you?
No.
It's a bit like with Johnny Spate with Alf Garnett. There was a point where I thought, I think you're allowing this to go on a bit too much, you know.
Yeah.
If the audience are misinterpreting, it's down to you to make sure... They understand. I think Al Murray had that for a while, didn't he?
Yeah. Well, it's a difficult line to tread. And, you know, and exactly. I wouldn't want to take away... When you watch... I mean, people, if they haven't seen you, there's lots of clips online and on Instagram.
Sure.
And the reason I think it works is because these are absolutely solid, fantastic jokes. So there's a surprise, you know, there's surprises. But they're proper jokes that will make... Sure. You know, I was watching it in Pret a Manger today and just laughing, and everyone was looking at... With my headphones on, I'm not insane. But you know, that makes you look worse because you just suddenly go, ah! You know, you're suddenly laughing. And so I look mad, but yeah, but it's properly funny. And, you know, for another comedian to be actually laughing
out
loud,
thank you very much.
Is a great thing, I think, to, you know, to be able to still be able to do. But that's, you know, that's what's fascinating, that you've had all those years, and I think everyone on the circuit, you've won awards, you were the Great British Comedian of the Year, which again sounds like quite a racist thing to be.
Well, actually, it was just called the British...
Oh, the British Comedian.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Even so...
Slightly less racist.
At least it wasn't the English Comedian of the Year, and there is one of those. You may have won that as well. Comedian's Comedian,
Sure.
You've been recognised.
Yeah, I've had
industry.
Peer respect and appreciation, and living. But this is a very sudden new thing.
And like,
it's taken me 26 years to become an overnight success.
Yeah. For social media to work for, you know, and you're in your late 60s. You do not look like you're in your late 60s, but you're in your late 60s. For that to work.
Well, there is that as well, because I'm getting a younger audience coming to my shows.
Sure.
And I'm, you know, and obviously it's because of that, isn't it?
Yeah.
I keep thinking, where are my age group?
They're all dead, Jeff.
Yeah, that is exactly.
Especially the East Ender ones.
Well, they don't know how to work the internet, that's for sure.
They
don't. I mean, actually, I don't want to diss Norwich, because, you know, there is a...
Let's diss this instead, shall we?
But that's... But when I, you know, talking about being old-fashioned, so I got in the cab from the station, and I said, it's all right if I use a card? He went, no, I'd rather have cash. There's my first step back into the 1970s. I said, do you want me to go and get some cash for you? He went, yeah, get in. And I thought, oh, okay, maybe you do take a card. Then he drove me to a cash point, which didn't fucking work. And then he took me to the Norwich Arts Centre, rather than the playhouse. And he said, look, you can... And then, but here was the beauty of it, and this was typical Norwich, he went, you can have that one on me. So I said, you can watch me if you want, you know, just so you know, you've had a little bit of a celebrity in the back of the cab as some way of giving something back. I said, are you on Instagram? He went, no. And I thought, okay. I said, well, what about YouTube? He went, no, never been on it. Who's never been on YouTube? How beautiful is that?
Amazing.
And he was happy with that. He was happy.
But again, that's, you know, that's a disconnect in the world. And I love that there are still cab drivers who are refusing to... Because nobody carries cash around. But hardly anyone carries cash around with them.
But then just say, you can have that one on me.
It's more hassle taking the card payment.
Yeah.
It's going to cost me.
It was fantastic.
Cost them like 50p to take their thing.
Fantastic.
But you have to move with the times, Jeff. And again, that's something you've navigated. Yeah. I think like to have a career that's lasted this long, you'll have had to navigate a little bit with the way comedy's changed. I mean, you were always very right on, I have to say, because you are more like that.
I mean, it's 80s. Funny because I come from an very old-fashioned left-wing tradition of, as we would say, anti-racist, anti-sexist, anti-homophobic. But the modern woke tradition, to me, is a little bit lightweight. So I haven't got problems with that. In fact, I was having an argument with one of my grandchildren. They were accusing me of being racist, right, because I wasn't prepared to pronounce Genghis Khan's name correctly, which is Genghis, apparently.
Yeah.
So I said, who cares about his name? Well, no, that's really racist, Grandad. You're not getting the name right. I went, he killed fucking... Do you know what? He actually killed 11% of the world's population. And that's the problem with woke policy. They're not interested in that. It's getting the fucking name right. So I think it's about priorities, isn't it?
It is.
Well. Genghis.
But that's where you having this you know, philosophy and history MA, isn't it?
So BA and MA.
Yeah, yeah.
Actually,
so it's
and I did some part-time lecturing as well while I was there.
Yeah. It's great when I think most comedians are, you know, even if comedians didn't go to university, they're clever people.
Yeah, I think you have to be clever to do stand-up comedy, don't you?
And you need to be able to do what you do and just be able to pull those facts.
Sure.
But it's just great when that happens. I suppose that's what, you know, Al does that within his, when he, that's the smart thing about it. his act, I think, is
the... Al Murray, he's very good on that history.
Yeah, the history stuff.
Information, and he plays with that very well, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does. So, yeah.
He's the master of that, actually.
He is. He's terrific. And, you know, we've all worked together on Time, Gentlemen, Please, apparently. So, let me ask you, I'll see if I've got any philosophical emergency questions for you.
Oh, no. Are we running out of time now?
No, we're not running out of time, but we've got plenty to go, but people like to hear their emergency questions.
Am I allowed to say I'm doing a tour and people...
Yeah, well, I was going to talk about that.
Because my agent will say, but I don't know when this comes out, so...
We'll put it out in time for the tour.
Okay, January.
Yeah, okay. No.
I'm saying that. I don't know if I'm coming to Norwich, though, so maybe I shouldn't say it now.
Are you going to Ipswich? Lowestoft?
Yeah.
Just everywhere around.
Well, have they got theatres there now?
We used to play Lowestoft.
In a barn, mate, in Ipswich, the comedy barn.
We used to do, like, Lee and Herring in the early days, we did, like, 4 East Anglian gigs, I would say. We did Lowestoft. Okay. Don't think Great Yarmouth. There was somewhere else we did on the north of East Anglia. Norwich, Ipswich sometimes. Yeah, so we was, like, you know, we loved it down here. I wish they felt the same about us. I don't know. Jeff.
No. The last time I did a gig in Norfolk...
Yeah.
This is Norfolk, isn't it? Well,
you're doing so well with the local knowledge.
I know exactly what happened. I don't know where it was. It was like a small town, a village even, a pub, like a village pub. There's a lot of these gigs now in village pubs, which are really good. And I tell you how long ago it was, sat navs were quite new and we still didn't trust them. Does anyone remember when we didn't? Oh, yeah. So it's very easy to get lost in Norfolk. Is it fair? Am I fair? There's not a lot of big motorways. You go off and you're just... So I got to the venue and I said to the other comedian, I'm a bit worried about getting out and getting back on the motorway. He went, don't worry, I've got a sat-nav. I went, He went, no, they're great. He said, I'll meet you outside, follow me, and I will lead you back onto the motorway. So I waited outside. It was raining. He turned up. He came up close. He went like that through the window of his car. And he drove off and I followed him and we just seemed to be getting further and further into the countryside. And I thought, oh, it's the sat-nav. You know, I thought these sat-navs, it's the devil's work. And then he drove off to some sort of country lane that led up to a building. I thought, this cannot be right. So he pulled up and stopped. When he got out, it wasn't the bloke that I was supposed to be. Yeah. He must have been in the audience, you know. and it was dark and it was raining. Because he went like that. I thought, okay, all systems go, you know that? Go, go, go. I mean, the fact that it was a Land Rover should have been a bit of a clue. Comedian. But you know, what happened to me? When he got out, I thought, hold on, this isn't a bloke. And he must know I'm following him. I really got out of there quick. Because you know what these people are like. They've all got shotguns in their barn.
It would be terrifying, especially with you following him.
It was a really weird one, that was. It was.
I didn't even heckle this guy's coming for me.
I had to find my way back and everything, yeah.
Jewelry isn't a gift you give just once. It's a way to remind your loved one of a beautiful moment every time they see it. Blue Nile can help you find the gift that says how you feel and says it beautifully with expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com and experience the convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com to find the perfect jewelry gift for any occasion. BlueNile.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Life is full of what-ifs, some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs, no deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
So tell us about the tour. Let's talk about the tour first. Okay. So it's called the Smart Casual Tour, right?
It's called Smart Casual. Yeah. Just because that's, yeah, I mean, that's just quite, I mean, it, one yeah, of my good jokes is about looking smart casual.
Yeah. And
what we're doing is we're doing 20 dates up till April, then we're not doing anything for the summer, and then we're going again from September.
Right.
All over the country, but I don't know why I shouldn't have brought that up, because I don't think we're doing Norwich. And
you'll do
I
it
feel
eventually.
Bad now.
They don't
but,
care.
Okay. But this is a whole new venture for me because I've never, ever gone on a tour where it's me, you know?
Yeah.
I'm just always been... I'm a comedy club guy.
Yeah.
So it's quite exciting. I'm going to have a support act as well. So I'm really excited about it, actually.
Yeah, it's great. I love the way that the internet is making different stars out of people, and, you know, and, you know, so you can bypass that. You know, because I think... Weirdly, it is sort of strange that you know, with all diversity and things improving a lot, you know, in lots of ways, I think for women and for ethnic acts, that I think there's still a class bias. I think it's, but you know, although there are some big working class comedians,
yeah, I think class or an underprivilege,
yeah,
you know, it doesn't get mentioned in the debates about diversity, and often. You know, there's a big movement in stand-up comedy to be inclusive and to be diverse, and I totally embrace that and get that. But no one ever mentions poor comedians like me who have the fucking bailiff knocking on their door. And I think that's a good point, actually.
It is a good point. And I think I was thinking about what was interesting about the late 80s and early 90s was you would get a broad range of different... It wasn't very diverse in terms of there weren't many women and there weren't many ethnic actors, but there was a broad range of jobs... Right, so like you would do a gig, there'd be someone from the docks, there'd be Parrot from Glasgow, and there'd be Ivor Dembina, who was a lawyer, you know, and there'd be all sorts of different jobs. But then it became very much like, and I may be partly to blame for this, university educated pricks.
It did. It's true.
And then it became all that, you know, when me and Stu were on the circuit, there were students, but there weren't, it was, you felt like we went to Adelaide in 97 or something, and the group of comedians went with a diverse range of white men.
But it's still partly like that. And interestingly, I think the black comedians are the working class ones now.
Yeah.
That's where that's coming from.
Yeah.
So that's an interesting change.
It is. But then for you to be able to, you know, to bypass all of the gatekeepers and put your stuff up and
people
find it.
Well, that's the great thing about the internet, isn't it? It's a direct relationship between you and your audience. There are no gatekeepers. There's no one no one at the BBC or whoever going, you're too old or you're too white or anything. I mean, I never got the Apollo.
No.
Because, obviously I'm much too old for the Apollo, aren't I?
I
guess. That would have been, you know...
Did you do John Maloney's show where he did the...
No, I didn't really want to do an age-specific thing either. I just tried to stay away from that.
Yeah.
I transcend age.
Well, you sort of do.
Yeah.
But, it's going to be really interesting to see, because, you know, you're saying you're getting recognised in the street all the time.
Yeah, I mean,
you know, I think if you're out on tour, what size venues are you playing? What have you plumped for?
What's this size?
This is 300.
So yeah, this sort of size and upwards. I think some are 200, some are 500.
Yeah, it's a good...
But we're selling out already.
Right.
Which is another remarkable thing. It's almost like it's somebody else. When something happens to you suddenly, you think it's like looking at somebody else having that experience. But once I get on the tour and I'm out there, I'm sure I'll fill my boots and enjoy it.
I think you really will enjoy it.
Staying in hotels and all that.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's fun the first time when you're
chicks.
21 years old.
It's just about the chicks for me now, Richard. It's not about the money anymore.
Yeah.
Obviously, the older lady, nothing sleazy. The older Jewish lady, really, whose husband died a few years ago, left him a big house and a lot of money in the North London area. That's where I'm gold is green, that sort of thing.
That's what you're aiming for.
Vanessa Feltz is who I'm after. Yeah,
we can sort that out.
I have to tell you. Can we talk about this?
Yeah.
Is this in your emergency questions? Ask about Vanessa Feltz. I've always had a thing for Vanessa Feltz.
Yeah.
And she's so posh as well, but But what it is one of the aspects of this this newfound fame and Instagram following is I'm getting famous people following me.
Right.
Well, it's certainly famous to me, Louis Theroux.
Oh, right, great.
Davina McCall. Who's the black woman that used to do the chat show during the day?
In Norwich.
No.
Trisha.
Yeah, she's following me. Yeah. Carol Vorderman sent me a message the other day.
Did she?
But I'm only using these people.
Watch out for Carol Vorderman.
It was a little maths question she sent me, but...
That's how she starts it, Jeff. Just checks you're up to the intellectual
what
standards.
What they don't know is I'm only using them to get to Vanessa.
Right, okay. I know.
I'm playing the long game on Vanessa.
I know Vanessa.
Do you know her?
Yeah, I've done her radio
show. Well, what I like about Vanessa is she's single now and she's stopped dating younger guys.
Okay.
So she usually goes out with black guys and I usually go out with black women. I think it's time she dated a Jewish guy. A Jewish... Well, actually, yeah, half Jew. Anyway, if you can be such a thing, yeah.
Do you think you got... I mean, I find, even if there was the opportunity, which there is not... I mean, just look at my front row and... I'm too tired after the... I just go back... I literally go back to the hotel and go to bed now. That's
Oh, no.
You're still game?
I would do, yeah. Well, if not that the opportunity has ever arisen, but I'm always prepared.
Okay. Luckily, ladies, he's got a cab waiting for him outside as soon as this is over. So you're safe. You're safe.
I think there's something about with what type of person you are, even if you are not... I mean, you're sort of... It's part of how you are and it might be dormant, but you're still... I think it's what you're capable of, you know. So I still leave room just in case somebody... Like Vanessa. Can you imagine if Vanessa turned up?
Yeah,
at my Premier Inn, looking for Lenny Henry. Write that down. That's a good gag, actually. Yeah.
I'm holding
it. What we got here?
I was going to ask you some philosophical questions. This is sort of philosophical.
Yeah, okay.
If you could go into a chrysalis and dissolve like a caterpillar and turn into anything you wanted to be. So you could come out as a butterfly if you want, but you can come out as anything. What would you change?
I don't like that question very much. No.
Okay, that's fine.
It's a bit hippie-ish, isn't it?
It is. I thought you would go for that.
You got any others? More?
Yeah, I've got lots more.
You got anything about boxing or...
All right, I'll ask you...
Chrysalis. He's giving me chrysalis questions.
I've got more. I've got about 2,000 more questions. We can work our way through them all one by one.
That one doesn't work for me. I don't know why.
Okay, that's fine.
Anything else?
Do you fear death?
No.
No?
No, don't. Even though I'm getting near to that.
Yeah.
Maybe there's something that happens biologically where you get used to the idea of that it's going to be happening sooner rather than later.
Yeah.
So, no, I don't really fear death, actually.
I mean, you seem well.
Yeah, but you never know, do you?
You never do know.
I mean, I'm at that age where if I have a fall, break the hip, go in hospital, get an infection, never see me again. I'm at that age.
You are there. I'm nearly there myself, but not quite. Who's the most famous person you've ever been in a lift with? No one?
No, I don't know.
Never been in a lift?
No.
They're really good. Give them a try, Jeff. It's a new way of getting from floor to floor.
I don't know. I mean, next year, if you ask me that question.
Vanessa Feltz.
Oh, it'll be...
I imagine she lives at the top of a penthouse somewhere.
Oh, make sure he gets stuck in between floors.
Right. All right, I'll ask you this emergency question. This isn't... Well, it's a little bit of philosophical, I suppose. Have you ever seen a ghost?
Not knowingly.
You think you might have met someone and not realised?
Yeah, you don't know,
do you? That's true.
They're your emergency questions, are they?
I didn't say they were good.
You know. Oh, dear. Hold on a minute.
Still got 15 minutes.
15 minutes. And we're on, and we've already done that. You've spunked the chrysalis question already.
It's a good question. You have a think about it. You have a think about it.
Do you get paid for this? Do you get paid?
Yeah, so amazingly.
I'm in the wrong game, I am. I have to write jokes and everything. You have to do questions.
Yeah, well, it's just a chat. It's just a chat about cool, see what comes up. As they don't...
I'm having a good time.
Yeah. Have you ever tried to suck your own cock, Jeff?
No. I've got people to do that for
me. Have you got it? Always. People. Ring, ring. Yeah. Send them up. Send up the cocksuckers. We're going to have a good time.
I didn't know you were sort of that kind of knobby.
Oh, yeah. That's all I do. That's all I do.
Childish.
I'm childish.
Infantile humor.
I'm childish. I'm rude. But, you know, I can be intellectual as well. Okay. I'm all over the place. I can be giddy. I can be sensible. I can get to the heart. I can open you up like a... A clam.
Well, you had me on the back foot with the chrysalis question.
Yeah,
there,
I did.
All that education gone to waste, and I couldn't even answer that question.
Yeah.
5 years at university.
Well, that's the same. The same happened to me. My granddad.
What did you do at uni?
I did history, but I didn't.
Where did you do it though?
I went to Oxford University.
Yeah, see.
And I did history, but I didn't do. I just did comedy. So all I did was do acting and comedy when I was there. And copied other people's essays. So I didn't. I read a lot of history books now, but I didn't read many history books. In fact, I got to like the last term and I went to the library. I thought I'd better read some books. And then I found a book about that saying Rudolf Hess wasn't Rudolf Hess and there was a different guy in Spandau. And I read that book from cover to cover. Wasn't in my course. And it was a load of bullshit. Because Rudolf Hess was Rudolf
Hess. How old were you when you went to university? Were you 18, 19?
I was 19, yes. I
was a mature student. I was 32. It's very different when you're older because you see it as your last chance in life to change your circumstances.
Yeah.
And all the others are 18 and they fucking hate you, didn't they?
Well, it's weird
because... I was
because...
bringing my kids in. That's the thing people hate about mature students, bringing your kids in and on half term to sit in the lessons. But But I had a great time. I loved it more than anything.
I think when you're 19, even if someone was like 23 and a mature student, you think, ooh, you know, you'd think that was ancient. So, it was... But I really feel that I would love to go to university. I'd love to go to Oxford University now.
Oh, yeah.
Because I would fucking work really hard and learn some stuff and do well. And I just, you know, in terms of academia, I kind of wasted it. But obviously...
Well, I think it was good for my career. Too young, they just do it because that's what they're expected to do. I think 18 is quite young.
It is, but also you have to work, you know, to get to university, you have to work pretty hard at school. And so I was a SWAT. And then the minute I got away from home, it was like, oh, you know, fuck it, I'm going to have a good time. I didn't manage to because I didn't know. I was too shy to talk to
them. Did I give Oxford kids get a grant?
Yeah, there were grants at the time. Yeah, I got a partial grant. My parents were like teachers, so they weren't rich, but they were. They contribute.
They don't get grants. So we got a grant. I remember I had a mortgage at the time, and it was a Labour government then, and they paid towards your mortgage if you went back to college.
Right.
What a fantastic world that was, wasn't it? Yeah.
It was. Well, when I came to London, they had the Enterprise Allowance, which I think was Thatcher.
Mm.
So you could set up as a business, and you would get £40 a week and your rent paid.
Yeah.
And then anything you earned, you could keep.
What a world we used to live in.
And it was, you know, we rented a house for, there was four of us in a house and it was £60 each a week to live in London.
Mm-hmm.
And so I earned about £100 a week and ate baked potatoes and £2 bottles of wine. And that was my dinner.
Did you take drugs in those days?
No.
Okay.
No. I was really scared of taking drugs. I drank a lot, which I think is probably worse.
I took a lot of drugs, actually.
Did you?
You know, Well, I think it's... don't tell Vanessa that. I might get her on the Charlie, though, when I meet her.
Yeah.
Do a bit of MDMA with Vanessa, have a little cuddle up.
It was that...
Hey? There's a whole world waiting for her out there.
That mid-90s time when
I think it's what period you're around, isn't it? If you come into contact with drugs. And I think, even in the late 60s, when I was a skinhead, there was a drug culture around skinheads. It was Black Bombers, which was like an amphetamine.
Right.
But also, we used to just, we were young, but we used to raid our mum's medicine cabinet, just take any bottles of tablets and just take them to see what happened. So, you know, which is a bit risky.
You grew breasts.
I used to be black. And I think, yeah, I enjoy. I think it's that extreme experience I used to enjoy as well. Yeah. But even in comedy, you know, there was a lot of cocaine around in the 90s. People just do it before they went on stage. And that. So I think it's where you're about. No comedians seem to take drugs or anything like that.
No, they're very
career-orientated as
they
well.
They are. It has become much more. It has become career. I think it's interesting. I, you know, I could never understand why comedians took coke, because for me, being on stage and getting that buzz, was,
yeah, sure,
you know, then to add coke to the top of that seemed like an insane thing to do. Because, I, you know, and I feel like performing is...
Yeah, and I don't think I actually took cocaine and performed very, maybe once or twice, but certainly when I got home,
I
did it, I think. I mean, I think what it was is when I started doing comedy, I'd finished university as a mature student. I got into comedy very quickly, was earning a living very quickly. Within a year, I was doing the Comedy Store.
Yeah.
And in those days, it was like being in a band. You know, you were earning lots of money. You didn't have to do anything else. So I think that's pretty much how I lived my life. However, I was still in my early 40s, so I was quite old to be living that lifestyle. But my girlfriend was considerably younger than me. Not inappropriately. Just considerably. Everyone's younger than me. I seem to be doing everything too late. Not too late, but past the time I should be doing it.
You know, it doesn't, you know, age, I think, once you get a certain age doesn't matter. Sure. And it is, you know, and what I think is interesting about you is a lot of people who did do drugs all through the 80s and 90s have, you know, are now in their 50s or 60s and have kind of lost their minds a bit, gone down what rabbit holes. You seem to have stayed very focused and sane.
For the most part.
Is, you know, it's interesting because that was part of the reason that I was resistant about drugs, was because I thought I don't want to fuck up my brain and I don't want to, I don't want to lose a part of myself, which you do see with certain, big drug comedians.
Certainly in the music business. And the music business, more, I've seen it in comedy as well.
Yeah.
You know, I think I always eat well and go to the gym as well. You know, I've never just given up my whole life to drugs. It's only that night or that weekend I've always been conscious of sorting myself out. So lucky, really, that I'm like that.
Have you ever tried to write your life story? It feels like there's a book in...
No, I haven't, actually. No. I'm considering it now that I've got a new audience that might be interested.
Yeah.
But I think the reason I haven't done it is because I've always seen my stand-up as the medium by which I talk about myself and my life, because I'm very autobiographical.
Yes.
Although having said that, it's in the form of stand-up, so it's truncated. Whereas, you know, there are more options and ways to do it if I was to do it in a book. So I am considering it.
Yeah, I mean,
I'm very lazy. I'm not.
It's hard writing.
Yeah,
a book.
I'd rather not do anything at all. I just, you know, you get those people. I'd rather just go home, have a spliff, listen to reggae, and that's it.
Yep.
And but I've got an agent now who phones me up every day. Are you doing any writing? Are you doing this? Drives me crazy. But I think you need an intervention in order to make a change.
And I think a lot of comedians, and again, in the 90s, I think especially, a lot of comedians, we get 20 minutes and coast on that 20 minutes and not really change that 20 minutes.
Yeah, yeah.
And then if you've got that and you know it works, which is fine.
Sure.
But then you've got a lot of hours in the day.
Yeah,
and you're up late at night, and so it's very easy to just go, you know, turn to drink or turn to drugs.
Yeah.
And
I think you're right. Yeah. You don't have to get up in the morning. That's the thing. So, but I did enjoy that period.
Yeah,
I have to say, but I've sort of got older now. I mean, it's hard to do cocaine when you're 68. It is hard. I mean, it's the recovery period is horrendous. So. Yeah. So now it's just Christmas, a little bit of Christmas. Look, but here's the problem I've got. I do talk about this on stage. At Christmas, even if I think the last time I took Class A drugs was last Christmas. I went to a party at the neighbour's, and, you know, I think people who take Class A drugs, they set themselves up for it. You go, right, we're going to do a bit of Charlie on Friday. So you set yourself up, you eat properly, you know, you turn off the phone and you have a big session. But I went to a party with my wife and people were just going, oh, here's a bit of Charlie or here's an E, and they were popping them in your mouth and I'm dancing away, and I just loved it. But it just took me so long to recover. But normally what I do is I get a little bit of Charlie. Are we allowed to talk about this? This is illegal, I've just realised.
Yeah, it's fine. I mean, there's a policeman waiting in the back of the... Clever way to get a confession
but
out.
But what it is with me is my... it's fair trade, though, yeah? Can you imagine if someone offers you a line of tonic, you check for the fair trade mark? No. But all my kids, my grown-up kids, here's the difference, the generation. None of them take drugs.
No.
They don't smoke. They don't drink, really. So I'm like some old... I think they just go, old areas, the old granddad with his laudanum. And that's what it's like. But no, I have to go into the bathroom of my own fucking house. I'm not sitting around in my house doing a bit of Charlie watching the football or something. I have to go and hide because my kids don't sort of... Well, actually, here, no, I'm going to tell you this joke. I did do it on stage. I don't want to do my material on stage, but this sums up the relationship between me and my kids. My eldest daughter, she phoned me up about cocaine during lockdown, this was. We were talking. She went, Dad, she went, you know cocaine? I went, well, of course I do. Why do you think you've always lived in rented accommodation?
Very good. Well, I hope you will. Right,
go. Should I?
Don't walk off. I'll get a round of applause to you and everything.
I've never been interviewed.
It's been fantastic. It's gone very fast, hasn't it?
It has gone very fast.
Look, great. Good luck with the tour. Where can the people find out where you are going on tour?
JeffInnocent.com is my website. Everything's on there. And sorry about those emergency
it's
questions.
It's all right. No, they don't always work.
I hope it didn't show you up in front of your friends.
Yeah, it's Ladies and gentlemen, give it up. The amazing Jeff Innocent. Thank you very much. Go and have a drink. We'll see you in a bit. You have been listening to Rahulastapur with me, Richard Herring, and my guest, Jeff Innocent. The music is provided by Scant Regard. I'm indebted to my friend Chris Evans, not that one, and his son Ben Evans, not that one, and all of his family. It's a huge Welsh brood. Thank you to Beckcliffe and George Linkford, and thank you to everyone at the Norwich Playhouse as well. It's been wonderful. This is a Sky Potato Fuzz on GoFasterStripe.com production.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Thanks for listening. richardherring.com/gigs. GoFasterStripe.com for all my books, downloads, all that sort of shizzle. Oh, yeah, I know all the cool words. And would love to see you on the Can I Have My Ball Back tour if you can make it. Bye.